Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I want to start this week's podcast by looking back at something that was said on last week's podcast, and thanks to GM Polo Mazzone on Twitter for bringing this to our attention. We must have a huge following in Italy or something, but he said, and I quote, "We're going to Tynecastle, a place where a lot of chaos, a lot of randomness can creep into the game. The qualifier there is that they still have Shanklin, so he could still score two goals, and Hart comes out with a ninja kick on a through ball and gets a red card. So there's still a lot of variance built into this game." Ominous words, says Gianpolo. Those were James's words on last week's podcast, I do believe. And I mean, James, in terms of the game against Hearts, the 2-0 loss against Hearts, this was a game where everything that could have gone wrong went wrong for Celtic. All the randomness of football in one game, in one half, you could say, came up and bit Celtic in the ass, as they had an opportunity to go top of the league with Rangers losing to Motherwell the day before. They go to Hearts. They have a man sent off. They miss a penalty. That's Adamida's first ever penalty that he's ever missed in his professional career. Yang is sent off for a red card that is a red card once in a blue moon. And then a penalty, which is not a penalty, is given. And it's just everything that is wrong with Scottish refereeing goes against Celtic, and they lose the game. And suddenly they're still in the exact same position as they were, second in the table.
I love your optimism, because it can always get worse. We could have had two more red cards or something like that. It was one of those games where, first of all, I need to start with just how horrible Hearts are. It disgusts me that we lost that game. They were basically everything that I expected them to be, and how kind of over stated their quality is this season. It's infuriating to me. But we had more shots, more XG, more possession, all of this, and this was with being a man down after 16 minutes. So and this is supposedly the third best team in the league, and we were talking about this before we went live about how inefficient live betting can be in football, and one of the hobbies I have, and I looked at the odds as the red card was being adjudicated in VAR, and we were still effectively 3-2 favorites after being a man down for the remainder of the game. And in fairness, given the way the game played out, that probably wasn't such a bad pricing for that at the time. So lots of just crazy stuff. I think there's some interesting conversation about the tactical setup that we ended up going towards, which I don't know if you've rewatched it now, but I mean, to me, it looked like a 4-2-3 once Kyogo came on, which, that's even ballsier than the infamous 4-3-2 that we went against Rangers. And again, despite that, despite basically abdicating the midfield against a team that has one extra player, they still couldn't really do anything of substance against us. It was just a cluster F, and really disappointing given the opportunity that we had. Now I will say that this goes back to why it's not catastrophic. It's not, we're still in coin flip territory, probably, as I talked about last week, is that Rangers also had a cluster F of negative variance against Motherwell. I mean, they had, including their penalty, I think they had close to 4 XG and only scored one goal. And they basically had no post shot XG outside of Tavernier's penalty that he made. So it wasn't because they were having difficulty, you know, creating chances or, you know, dominating possession or any of that. It was just one of these games where, you know, either the opposition keeper stands on the head or some combination and none of your players can finish and they all hit the bar or, you know, get launched into the 10th row, that kind of thing. So it just happened that both teams had weird negative variants on the same weekend. And, you know, we might see more of this as the pressure cooker keeps turning up over the last, what are we down to, 9 games now?
Yeah, I mean, Alan, there are some things you can't legislate for. And this is where I sort of have a small bit of sympathy for Brendan Rodgers, even though I have been quite critical of his role to play in this season as a whole. But, I mean, you cannot legislate for a foul from Yang, which I've never seen bar Nani back in like the Champions League in like 2007 or something was the last time I saw a red card like this. You cannot legislate for a referee making a decision like that, having the VAR team look at that. And then the Iwata handball, which by the way is supposed to have been gotten rid of this year. Those sort of handballs we were told would not be given as handballs this season. You do have Dermot Gallagher doing what he does in agreeing with every single decision that the referee made. And I'm not one, as everybody who listens to this podcast on the regular knows, to blame the referee for the inefficiency within the team. But it's undeniable, as Brendan Rodgers said after the game, that those refereeing decisions impacted the game to a complete negative degree on Celtic's behalf. And if people think I'm being biased, I'll throw in it that Celtic's penalty, that wasn't a penalty either. You know, that was a joke shop of a decision. It's just, it's beyond belief and beyond frustrating that referees, especially VAR referees who have the benefit of seeing these decisions multiple times, can still come to these sort of decisions.
When you say it beggars belief, I mean, you know.
Well, that's true. It doesn't. It's unbelievable, but believable at the same time.
It doesn't beggar belief. So two things. One is that, you know, because of the whole nature of how Scottish football administers referees, it's inevitable you're going to get a level of incompetence that is probably out of kilter with the professionalism of the league that they're adjudicating. Simply by the fact that they're part time is a red flag immediately. I mean, that one simple fact is that you've got part time referees refereeing full time professionals at the highest level, elite level in that country. That is just ridiculous. And then you get into the analysis that I've done over multiple years of data, which shows that there is, you know, there are patterns to the decision making, and those patterns tend to favour whatever club is playing out of Ibrox. That is what it is. So, and the flip side to that is that obviously, you know, because of the nature of Scottish football, it's Celtic that will sometimes suffer because of that, because they're the ones that are challenging with that club. And, you know, the reasons for that are probably varied and complex. But what I do know is that the SFA do little or nothing to mitigate the potential reasons for that, in terms of, people talking on Twitter about you don't even have a register of interest. You don't even have a register of whether it be commercial, which club you support, or where you were born, etc. I mean, that's just, to me, that is the minimum level of control, a minimum control any professional sport would have over its officialdom. It's just a basic thing, and the Scottish football are determined. I mean, they're just determined not to have that. So again, but that all speaks to the culture that we're dealing with here, which is not one of transparency and openness, right? So here we are. We kind of knew that this was. We laugh and joke about it and talk about in sort of slightly oblique terms about variance and what have you. So some of it's just shitty bad luck, right? And in some respects, you know, if you have all your shitty bad luck in one game, that's probably better than it being spread over 10 games, maybe. You lose one match kind of thing. But, you know, it isn't surprising. I mean, because of the nature of the people concerned and the fact that, you know, previous performance, right? So there was two chances given, like you say, to massively impact the game. Now, I agree with you on the Yang one, for example. I to my reading of the Yang, and again, I've not asked my expert yet, but my reading of the Yang one is that Yang actually was clever, i.e. he initiated the contact by putting his leg across and then forcing Cochrane to flip over. Now, I think a VAR would pick that up. I would have thought a VAR would pick that up, that subtlety. And therefore, I was very surprised that that was given. The Yang sending off, again, my understanding of the different incidents I've seen is that had Yang, you know, forward motion with his foot into the guy's face, you could say, well, yeah, you can't really do that. That's kind of beyond reckless. That's actually highly dangerous. But when it's the player throwing his head at the player, at the guy's foot, I would say that's sufficient mitigation. And that, but also, you know, was Robertson's decision of it's a foul and it's a yellow card, was that a mistake that you felt was so ridiculous you had to override it? No, clearly not. And then the penalty, like you say, was very redolent of the Bernabeu one last year, where the ball hit, the guy's not even looking and it hits him behind him, and he has no idea, no clue what's going on. And like you say, I thought we'd kind of moved on from that, but it is frustrating because, you know, after the sending off, there was growing frustration within the Hearts crowd because they were moving the ball so slowly. They were utterly, apart from one chance that they created down the right-hand side, that Shankland, it was actually Scales, got a good block in. That was literally the only chance in the first half that they created of any note up to the penalty. The frustration levels were growing in the crowd. It looked equally as likely that Celtic would break and score. And then, you know, another opportunity is presented by that ludicrous handball decision. And then once the home team gets the lead and 10 men, that's a very different scenario in terms of your ability to over. You've got to take more risks. Rodgers threw Kyogo into the play. And then again, even the second goal, I mean, the guy falls over. It actually literally slips and the ball ends up perfectly at the feet of Shankland. It's a terrific finish by Shankland, absolutely terrific finish. But again, you know, and I completely agree with James, right? I've seen, Naismith linked with such and such and BBC headlines, you know, Hearts are back with a bang, etc. It's like, you know, they've won a game and they've drawn a game against their rivals in midweek, both basically because of refereeing decisions, have essentially been outplayed by all the metrics in both games, chances, XG, all of that, and yet they're sitting on 4 points. And that's pretty much the story of their season. Yeah. Now, they're benefiting from really two things. One is that, of course, they should be challenging for third. Of course they should. But the other two teams that should be challenging for third, Hibs and Aberdeen, are absolutely dreadful. Aberdeen, in particular, are just shocking, given the squad of players that they've got. And the second thing is, you know, they're getting just positive variance, you know, and have been for quite some time. They're overperforming their XG. They're not conceding the goals they should concede or anything like. And it's, I don't know that Hearts will be another, Naismith will be another case of Barry Robson, but I'm more minded to think that than think that he's some sort of great messiah. Because the numbers just don't stack up. But listen, we expected this. We got it. The best I can say about it is that, you know, it has a galvanizing effect on the team again in terms of just that whole sort of in-siege mentality and togetherness.
Mm. Yeah, one of the reasons I don't tend to get into refereeing discussions is because I always feel like you should be able to find a way to get past it. Especially considering Celtic's dominance. But in this game in particular, it was inescapable. If you get a man sent off, what was it, 12 minutes in, you're fighting an uphill battle there regardless. And then you get a penalty given against you that, you know, is not a penalty. Then you're fighting a double uphill battle. But in terms of Celtic's performance, we'll just dive into that. There's one piece of play that really wanted me to throw my shoe at the TV. And this is symptomatic of Celtic all season long. And I know, Alan, you were saying that they're trying to get the ball forward too quickly at times, but it's the Shanklin goal that was disallowed for offside. Iwata had the ball. He carried it forward. He had an option to his left the entire way from his own box to the halfway line. The entire way. He could have given the ball five or six times. He dawdles on it five or six times. And eventually, out of lack of communication that there's someone behind him or just lack of awareness from his part, he gets intercepted. They go up and score. And luckily for VAR in this case, it was marginally offside. And I would say it was, like, if I were VAR, I probably
microscopically
would have given it. I probably would have given it. It's just crazy. It drove me insane because, like, this is your opportunity in midfield, and you go and do something that stupid that I think that's almost a droppable offense, because you could have cost at that point in the game before Hearts had scored their second goal. Celtic were on the uprise, and all of a sudden now all of the momentum was lost because of that one stupid mistake that's so easily fixed that it's not like this is what I mean by some things you can't legislate for. Brendan Rodgers cannot legislate for Tomoki Iwata doing that. That's the sort of thing that really drives me mad watching Celtic, is just stupid decisions from players that should know better than that.
Well, you've not surprised me, Ender, that you've picked up on that and not how Liam Scales defended for that second goal.
Liam Scales PR thing here. But it's Cameron Carter-Vickers that loses his man, not Liam Scales.
There's two problems. One is that, again, and this is what I've been talking about with Scales, he might win his headers, and he did win that header, but it's where the ball goes. It's not controlled. He headed it straight to an opponent, right? Then, rather than, you know, which is what Celtic has been doing quite well, which is saying to Hearts, right, we'll stay in shape in defence, and are you good enough to break us down? No, you're not. He then rushed out. He gets bloody walked around by Shanklin, who's slower than me, right? And then of course, it's all open then. So that was terrible defending. But Iwata, that was a horrible moment. Iwata's other blind spot, which happened twice, the one thing that really triggered me that he did twice was when actually Celtic played their way out, Iwata then played the ball to somebody under pressure, like I think it was Ida on one side, might have been Taylor on the other, I can't remember exactly. And then he got the ball. He got the ball back, and then essentially he had the pitch in front of him. And rather than play forward, and rather than play into the space, he then gave the ball back to the person who was essentially trapped on the touchline. And every chance for Celtic to get forward was a prisoner in that game. You had to take every forward chance you got. And twice he did that, and it's because his natural instinct is always to take the safe option. And you know, that has its pluses and minuses, and that, you know, his defensive numbers are very good. But in terms of, you know, can you actually progress the ball? And you need to, when you've got three, especially if you've got three quick forwards on the pitch, then you're just going to slow the team down. So, yeah, there was a few triggering moments in the game, I have to say. But you're always going to get that when you're struggling with 10 men, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It's hard to be overly critical of the overall structure of Celtic because, I mean, they had to do something. They had to figure out things on the pitch. But that bit didn't need to be figured out. That was just a simple 5-yard pass to the left-hand side. Yeah, yeah. But James, you mentioned the shape that Rodgers went into in the second half when he brought Kyogo on. Was it the first or second half he brought Kyogo?
I think it was second half, yeah.
Second half. So what changed in terms of the structure from what you could see?
Well, we were, I think, and Alan, you'll know better, but I think we went more towards a 4-3-2 when it initially happened, when we went the man down with Ida and Maeda up top. And then once Kyogo came on, we basically almost went 4-1-1-3 or 4. I mean, we were just throwing people forward. So, you know, O'Reilly, I think, was the nominal second midfielder, but he was pushing forward a lot. And then, you know, you basically had, I think the thought was Maeda would get forward on the wing and then drop into the midfield when we get into a defensive shape. But that's, you know, to Alan's point, I mean, I love being aggressive, but I think there are times to do it. And I think we could have played for a month in a relatively defensive 4-3-2 shape, and Hearts were not going to score against us. They are dreadful in being able to create chances from a central perspective, and even from a wide perspective. So my preference would have been, let them have the ball. We're down a man. And with the players that we have, hit them on the counter, because again, they do not have the people. They had their best center back out. They were sticking with three at the back. So there were plenty of channels to hit in half space. And we saw that. I mean, we did on a relative basis. We were breaking against them, and that was out without really sucking them in. We were pressing them down a man when they had the ball, and they were having to go long at times, even though they were down a man. And so I get it. Like there was a reason that we were doing it. It's just my preference would have been, particularly earlier on, before we went down the goal, to, like I said, draw them in and hit them on the counter. But even having said that, we still created enough going forward that very easily, without the ridiculous penalty, could have been at least a draw, if not, us pulling it out. Just frustrating.
Yeah. Shout out to Dyson Maida, who has done the Scott Brown and could grow hair this entire time and just has chosen to be bald. It's a ballsy, sort of way to go, but listen, I think he surprised us all with a little lock of hair growing this weekend, but unfortunately it didn't translate to him being any better on the ball.
That's true.
What was interesting, Alan, was when Kyogo was on, there did seem to be a little bit of a link up between him and Ida. Like he was dropping in, and there was a couple of dummy runs that Kyogo had made where the ball went to Ida, and it was sort of a 1-2 sort of situation. Like it definitely showed that there might be scope there for that if it is needed.
Yeah, I mean, Kyogo was terrific, really, when he came on. I mean, he's a bit chaotic, right? I mean, he can see when he gets the ball, if there's an option for an easy pass, he just doesn't take it. He tries to do something a bit more difficult all the time, which can be a bit wearing. But in this game, it was almost like, you wanted somebody to create a bit of chaos on their final third. And he actually did that. And in surprising ways, how often have we seen, Kyogo doing, Maradona turns and driving at the team from the halfway line and running past three or four guys. But that's not something we've really seen from Kyogo, trying shots from outside the box and so forth. So, he was trying to do something. He was trying to change the game, to be fair to him. He was kind of a bit of a breath of fresh air, but it did really mean that you had three players out of nine outfield players then that really weren't, other than if you got the ball to them in the box, weren't going to take a lot of part in the game, because Maida, if you give him the ball wide left, what's going to happen? I mean, really, you have to get him behind the defence, and then he's either got a one-touch finish or a one-touch cross. Otherwise, he's just going to recycle the ball. In fact, there was another horrendous moment when he got the ball late in the game, and he was up against the last defender, and he turned back and he passed it back and he gave it away, and Daniel Kelly was left with a 2-on-2 and had to bring the guy down and take a yellow card. I mean, it's just like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? It's just trust your pace. Just not the, if anything, just not the ball and just run after it. I mean, you're good at that, right? So yeah, that was tricky. But I mean, I have to say, I thought Ida was actually, I mean, a toss up between him and Roy Riley probably, but Ida was probably my man of the match. I mean, he had the highest kind of packing score and the highest expected scoring contribution score of the game. Now, the penalty kind of obviously influences that. Matt O'Reilly set up five chances, but I just thought Ida's hold-up play was excellent, and he was always available. And there were those moments where he was getting ridiculous balls punted at him, and he was getting something on it and actually controlling it, bringing it down and then bringing the next person into play. And I thought that was really impressive. He reminds me a bit of when, as I say, when Rodgers brought in Ollie Burke and Timo Weah, and that they were kind of all-round forwards. You couldn't say they're not target men, they're not poachers, they're not out-and-out wingers, but they're kind of a hybrid of all of those things. And Rodgers obviously likes that multifunctional kind of forward, which, to be fair, Kyogo isn't. So I thought he was dead impressive in that sense. And him and Kyogo, like you say, you know, in a half, Kyogo's numbers were pretty impressive, both passing actually, is, you know, getting the ball forward and running with the ball and creating danger in the box. So I don't know. I'm not convinced it's the way forward in terms of, you know, an out and out two, unless we do this sort of narrow kind of diamond thing that we've talked about. But I suspect that ship has long sailed. So yeah, that was okay. I guess what I will do feel obliged to say is, in terms of, James is right, you know, the XG numbers, the chances that Celtic created, but a lot of that was game state. I mean, when the game went to 2-0, they effectively stopped playing, right? They literally stopped attacking. And therefore, and a lot of Celtic's chances came after the score was already 2-0. And, you know, so we did kind of pad out the XG a little bit because of game.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
State, I think that's only fair to say. The more encouragement I take is the fact that between the 16th and the 43rd minute, before Beaton intervened, they were getting more and more frustrated and the crowd was getting more and more restless. And actually, I could have seen us winning the game. Had it not been an intervention.
Mm. I realize this is a sort of a very broad question for the show, but given the context of the red card, the penalty, and everything that came with the actual game state with the referee, and was this a good performance? Like that's as broad as a word as I could possibly use, but I didn't necessarily think it was a horrendous performance from Celtic given the circumstances. It's impossible to know because we were a man down, but I feel like with the full selection, we probably would have came out with a win in this game if we had played the way we did.
So, no, James, have you got an answer? Go on, James, you go first.
Yeah, I was just going to say, all things considered, yes. I mean, playing a man down for... you know, what was ended up being 85-90 minutes all in with the extra time in the first and the second half, and basically making it look like two teams at relative parity all in, you know, not looking like a team who's being dominated and overwhelmed when you have a man down. And the effort was there. I mean, I agree with Alan. I mean, Ida put in a shift, man. I mean, he was all over the place. And I think generally speaking, all the players were like that. I mean, it was an incredible effort given the circumstances. But again, I go back to the same kind of, you know, what lesson do we take from this? Which is, I think it's dangerous to draw lessons, not only because of the situation, the craziness of the game, but also, again, how bad hearts have been defensively, just generally. And that, you know, again, Kyogo and Ida linking up, us basically abdicating the midfield and not being punished for it. I think a lot of that has to do with hearts and how they set up and how they play. So I don't think it's necessarily transferable. So the idea of, again, going back to this 4-4-1-1 or 4-2-3-1 with Kyogo and Ida playing together would really make me nervous. Obviously, now we've got the added delight of not knowing what's going to go on with Cal McGregor with his Achilles. I guess that's what I've read he's got an ailment with. So, but yeah, I think given the circumstances and what happened in the 16th minute, it was, you know, a pretty good performance overall.
Mm. Yeah, I'd be a bit more cautious on that. And if you look at the performance metrics sort of player by player, what struck me was that the players, the let's call it the big players. So, you know, Johnson, Carter Vickers, O'Reilly, Kyogo, and Ida all had pretty, you know, better than good games, but, you know, in some cases outstanding. And if Celtic are going to win this league, the others have got to step up, right? You can't, you know, we're already have been over reliant on, for example, O'Reilly and McGregor for far too long, 90 minutes every game. McGregor is now broken down. You know, Carter Vickers, we've been crying out for him to come back into the defence because he makes such a difference. Johnson's come back into his form of last year. But it's your Scales, your Taylors, Iwatas, Bernardos, Maidas, they're going to have to step up. They're going to have to find a way to contribute to that level, at least some of the games, even if it's tag team, right? They've got to do that. You know, the sort of less stellar players, if I can put it that way, because it really was what I would call the big hitters in the team that stepped up and dealt with it on Sunday, and the other ones kind of were a bit of a mixed bag with some horrendous moments that we've talked about thrown in, and it can't be that for this run in. It's going to need more than that from the not from the bit part players. These are all regular performers, but you know, I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, someday we'll have more than four players that play well in the same game.
Well, I'm actually in full agreement with Alan said there. I'm kind of resigned to the fact we're not going to get that from most of those people because I don't think they're very good in what they're being asked to do, generally speaking. So, yeah, I just, you know, my view was more of grading on a curve. I mean, that these are the people we have. They're probably going to keep playing at a similar rate given the way we're playing and given that we were a man down. I thought generally within that context, it was pretty good. But yeah, I agree with Alan. I mean, for us to tilt the odds as far as getting to the ultimate goal here, we're going to need, you know, one or more of those guys to step up and or, you know, Hatate comes back, McGregor's hopefully not out for any significant period of time and able to, you know, play at a level. I mean, that continues to be a concern with Carter Vickers. You know, he's playing. Is he actually fit, right? So we don't know. Our guys doing things like taking injections to deal with pain, and that has its own, you know, deleterious effect on what level of play they can operate at, even if they're kind of gutting through it. So, you know, so yeah, I generally actually agree with Alan.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about this before, but I guess the issue I have is that when the, let's say, the lesser players on the team do play well, there always seems to be a situation where Cameron Carter-Vickers either wasn't playing or didn't play well, or Matt O'Reilly was playing poorly while Cal McGregor was playing well, while Iwata had a good game, and it never really linked up. I just want more than four players, I don't care who they are, to play good all in the one game. But we'll hopefully that'll happen at some point. We do want to talk about something else as well. Today seems to be that Lila Bada is going to leave Celtic. We spoke about the reasonings behind it as a whole on a previous podcast. If you want to go and get that, you can see it in on our YouTube page. But it looks like he's heading out the door to the MLS. Charlotte FC seems to be his destination, and £10 million all in seems to be the fee agreed if you take in everything in terms of add-ons and stuff like that. So he came in a couple of years ago for about $3.5 million, Alan, and I know there were different circumstances with Jeremy Frimpong's contract, but if you tell me that we're getting the same amount of money for Lila Bada as we did for Jeremy Frimpong, not only does that make me more angry that we undersold ourselves with Jeremy Frimpong, but it does tell me we're getting a pretty decent fee here for Lila Bada. Good return, by 3.5 times about the money you spend on him. It's a no-brainer at this point, given his circumstances.
Yeah, that old bank balance. I mean, they're probably running out of digits for, you know, the software in terms of, you know, displaying the balance.
Y2K all over again.
Yeah. Listen, we talked about this last week. It's the best possible outcome for all parties to this very sorry tale. And I don't think I've got anything else to say about it, really. Sorry.
James?
Yeah. So I think the only thing I'll add, and it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Abada's situation specifically, but I think the idea of getting into a systematic player trading model, and I'm, you know, hindsight's 20/20, obviously, but you know, the idea of proactively being disciplined about the player arc and the timeline of when to sell players. So I talked about it heading into last summer and saying that, you know, list the players who reasonably, given their timeline at Celtic, should be in the pipeline potentially for sale. The obvious ones were Jota, Hatate, Abada, and O'Reilly. And we sold a Jota, but it wasn't because of some proactive, strategic player trading model. It was some lunatic Saudi that wanted to hand us over $25 million. Could we have gotten more for him over the summer? Who knows? I think that this also speaks to the degree with which quote unquote data, you know, trademark data, can create inefficiencies where if clubs aren't sophisticated in how they're deploying data through analytics, they can overpay for guys that are, and I'm not saying they're doing this in the cases of Bada. I said last week that part of the reason why I was so interested in about analyzing his season, the season with Celtic, was how much of his performance was a derivative of Ange Ball versus how much of it was, you know, kind of idiosyncratic to him and his development arc and that kind of thing. So we never really got any answers to that. And so he, you know, if you just look at his quote unquote data profile and, you know, you're Charlotte FC, and I don't know anything about them other than who the owner is. So I don't know if they do data analysis and that kind of stuff, but, you know, I could see clubs that deploy that kind of approach looking at his data profile and say, hey, this guy is brilliant. You know, this is a steal, because I read what they're using, what they call young designated player, which is outside the salary cap parameters in MLS. So like, you know, Messi's obviously totally different, but, you know, Messi's a designated player. Some of the big name players that come over from other leagues on big money, Giakoumakis was a designated player, I think. So they tend to be, you know, higher paid and larger transfer fee. And that's, you know, so I get it. You know, I wouldn't have been comfortable in that price range yet until I saw more evidence that it's, you know, more about Abada than it was about Ange Ball. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about how quixotic he is, how he's got this very weird kind of profile. So, you know, I'll be kind of tracking him just out of that morbid curiosity of, you know, my attribution model that I've built. Not that I want to be watching Charlotte FC for any purpose, any other reason, but So yeah, I think it'll be interesting. Right now, I would say I'm content with the amount that we got for him, as opposed to when we sold Frimpong, when everyone was saying, you know, good business, and I had my hair lit on fire saying this is horrible.
Yeah. About the one the Bundesliga is Jeremy Frimpong. I think he has like 13 assists or something now.
And 10 goals
like,
and 10 assists he's got.
Yeah.
Both their wing backs are yeah. Well, yeah. Yep. I think Celtic do have a resale
sell on,
etc. So on that one, so there may yet be a bounty on that one.
Yeah. Well, if Real Madrid are looking at Alfonso Davies at the minute, so if they want a new right back as well in the same sort of model as Alfonso Davies, I'd say Jeremy Frimpong's probably right up on the list of players who could suit that role. But yeah, we'll wait and see what happens his career anyway. But good luck to Lilibada if and when he does leave the club. Obviously, circumstances way outside of his control that cause it all. So best luck to him. We're going to finish the show by looking ahead to the game this weekend, which is a cup game against Livingston. Livingston, obviously, their luck has run out, you would say, in the SPFL. The model that they have is successful, but only for a certain degree. At some point, there generally does have to be some sort of development other than relying solely on your pitch being twice as small as everyone else's and it being freezing cold and having big men on the pitch. Sometimes you do have to develop that game plan. They didn't. So, I mean, they're doing quite well to be at this point in the cup. So how are we feeling about the cup game this weekend? I mean, it's a perfect opportunity to bounce back. Best team you could possibly ask for in terms of sort of getting momentum back into the team.
Possibly it's kind of a free hit for them. They've got absolutely nothing to lose here. So listen, their underlying numbers are not as horrific as their league position. It could just as easily be Dundee at the bottom of the league, frankly, as it could be Livingston, really. But what I think personally, my own view is what's hurting them is that rather than understanding that the data and perhaps actually just holding their nerve and continuing to do whatever it was that they were doing. He's now, if you look at it, every week the formation changes and the personnel's changing, and he's doing that classic thing of, you know, we weren't necessarily shit, but we're getting terrible results. If you just stuck at it, the results may well have changed. The underlying data would have suggested that. But if you continually change the lineup and you continually change the formation, guess what? It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And actually, you do start to lose games and you do start to look like a bit of a bedraggled team. I mean, they're on a horrendous run, I think, at the moment. I'm just sort of looking at their numbers. I mean, they beat St Mirren at home sort of a couple of weeks ago, but that was their first win in the league since 7th of October. So, I mean, that's just a horrendous run. And they're starting to ship goals. I mean, they shipped 3 to Ross County, 3 to Motherwell, 2 to Ross County, 4 to Dundee, another 3 to Motherwell, etc. So they're starting to, as I say, get bad results on top of bad performances. And as I say, a bit of me does think that they should just have held their nerve and believed in themselves a little bit. And that's very easy to say. But they've really shuffled the pack and they've started to really, I think the last 9 league games, right, they've made 33 lineup changes. Okay, so that's just not good, and I don't think that's helping them.
Yeah, generally, yeah. If you're sorry, James, I was just going to say it gets to a certain point where managers will start to search for the answer, and sometimes the answer is, well, what made you so successful in the last couple of years? Just keep doing that. But when you're under pressure, it's a different story altogether. It's easy to say stick at it, but if there's board pressure saying you need to change something, then that's probably where it's coming from.
Yeah, if Martindale's flailing about, I mean, I guess that would probably be, this should be a slam dunk kind of a game. Given all that's going on heading into it, but and we should be up for it, one would think, particularly coming off of that game. But if someone's in a kind of a chaotic mess and grasping at solution, there's always the possibility that he he rolls the dice and something comes up aces. So, you know, last time it was almost laughable. They went with like a back six, flat back six, and were trying to defend the wide areas against us, which again, given all the things that we've talked about the entire season, it's like, thank you. thank you for gifting this game to us. Yeah, that was like the worst thing you could do.
We'll just use our better players. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just nuts. But so, you know, if he lines up bunker, you know, if he plays like Craig Levine, basically would be my fear and goes for a nil-nil extra time type of situation. But again, I suspect that's unlikely given the state that they're in and how kind of chaotic he's been. And, you know, so one would think, because what I don't want to see, because the one thing Livingston is relatively adept at doing is defending deep when they're organized and high crosses. Right. So, you know, if our game plan devolves into whipping high crosses into Ida against Livingston, that's the recipe that's going to get me not only a little anxious, but, you know, quite annoyed. So, you know, again, if I was Martindale, that's what I would want to try to have it devolve into. He hasn't shown that. So hopefully he doesn't figure it out.
Well, maybe this is a game, Alan, for the Kyogo in the pocket role where he's arriving late to crosses pulling back to him. You know, the thing we saw like once and then never did again.
Well, it happened once against Hearts as well. O'Reilly found him with a ball, and he did get his toe on the end of one in the 6-yard box. But yeah, we don't see it enough, and we don't see it enough with him in control. You know, that sort of essentially tapping in the 6-yard box, the sort of you know, that's his speciality. But yeah, that's, you know, I that's the best way to get the best out of him. I mean, I do think if Celtic are going to play a more mixed game, which means, you know, more direct on occasion, more early attempts at getting in behind, and are going to want to vary it with some early crosses and some deeper crosses and maybe some higher crosses, then clearly Ida's better suited to that game. I don't think Livingston are particularly, I wouldn't be as worried as James in that sense. I'm not sure that there is any more or less adept at defending that than any other team in terms of the quality of the defenders that they've got. And as I say, they are sort of flailing around at the moment in terms of selection. So if they could continue to flail around, then, you know, I think Celtic should obviously win. And but yeah, you got to be confident, I guess.
Yeah. Anything else before we finish up? Anything you just want to chat through?
No. I mean, health. I mean, we just really need Hatate and McGregor back and fit. So hopefully, you know, by the end of the international break, that was an abstraction for a while here, but it's rapidly approaching now. And I don't think that the fixtures heading up to that are all that daunting. So, you know, on a relative basis. So, see a light.
Yeah, I come back to, I think every game's equally as risky in a sense.
Well, I agree, only because
I don't have confidence in what performance Celtic are going to produce, really.
Agree with that. Yeah. Agree with that. But it's, you know, we don't have a derby, and, you know, we're kind of done with the Hibs and the Hearts and the Aberdeen, where they actually have some talent of finishers that can really hurt us. So that's more what I'm referencing. Yeah. But I agree with you. Like, my confidence level that Craig Levine's not going to take points off of us and I'm going to rip my hair out, you know, is nowhere near where it should be. But I at least see a glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. It could be a freight train.
I think the relative injury situation is an interesting one, because certainly, you know, you talked about negative variance at Ibrox on their game, but what I saw was a team just basically rolling dice. They were just throwing the ball continually into the box on the basis that eventually, because we've got probably slightly faster, slightly better players, one of them will put the ball in the net. But that's really all it was. It was literally just bombard the box with as many crosses as you possibly can and hope that something happens. But they, you know, they in that game, they had four defensive midfielders. That's how they started, with four defensive midfielders. And then one of the wingers, McCausland, had to go off after half an hour. And they brought on Fabio Silva, who's he's got to show some nice touches. But let's be kind and say, you know, it takes time to adjust to Scottish football sometimes. You know, so if they're you know, if Cortez is out long term and Matondo's out long term, and you know the pace and penetration wide and Seema's out long term, that I think will have a huge impact on the title race. And if you're going to rely on Dessers to score the goals to get you over the line, you're going to have to create a lot of chances. So, you know, these, I think those bits of variance on the injury front at the moment, I don't know what the long-term prognosis for any of those players is, but, you know, that could be a really key factor.
Do you know how in, like, F1, you're allowed to upgrade your car as the season goes on, but you can only do it in very specific ways? I sort of wish football had a rule where if you have all these injuries, you're allowed to bring in one player, but the rule is that he has to have previously played for you, and you can only use it like once. Imagine the difference it would make if Celtic could just pull Aaron Moy out of retirement right now, just for the final games of the season, just to see us through. It would, like, even just thinking about the wasted talent of Jota, like, over in Saudi Arabia, and like, just not wanted over there, and the difference he would make. But there's no point in, you know, wasting time thinking about what ifs and what could have been. But yeah, God, what could have been with Jota this season if we were able to just bring him back and forget everything happened?
Yeah, and the balance in the bank would have been nearly 50 million, and that wouldn't do.
Well, I know. Yeah. And then what would the shareholders do?
Yeah.
What would the shareholders do? Look, I think that's where we'll park the show for this week. We'll be back next week looking at the Livingston game. Hopefully it'll be looking at a win. Every time I say that, we seem to do something to mess up the game. So hopefully that's not putting a jinx on the team going forward. If you want to get this podcast, it's available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want the video, do be sure to subscribe to the channel, and you'll get notified every time a video goes live. And do get involved in the comments, drop a like as well, and we'll chat to you then. Good luck.
Softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.